Would you please turn to the Gospel of Matthew chapter 26, Matthew chapter 26. If you are new with us this morning, we are so glad that you are here. We've been working our way through the Gospel of Matthew. We began this in January, and we're going to continue it through Easter, where we've been looking at some of the key events in the life of Jesus. And this morning in our passage, we come to this passage where Jesus shares the Passover meal with his disciples. And as we'll see, he changes the meaning and the focus of this wonderful meal to himself. And so we're going to jump right in. And if you have Matthew chapter 26, we're going to start in verse 26 and go to verse 32. We read this: "While they were eating, Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, 'Take and eat, this is my body.' Then he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, 'Drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink from this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom.' When they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Then Jesus told them, 'This very night you will all fall away on account of me. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I've risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee.'" Now, one of the things about being a Christian is sometimes we are misunderstood. Sometimes there are accusations that we have to face. And this was no different with the early church. And the early church began in the Roman Empire and really spread from there. And so one of the things that they would have to face is these misunderstandings and these accusations when they gathered as a body of believers. They were gathering together. More and more people were coming to faith. And those in the Roman Empire that were not followers of Jesus, they looked at these early Christians kind of skeptical, and they were very actually confusing to them. They thought these Christians were very odd and strange. And so, for example, some of the things that they would accuse these early believers of is being an atheist. Now, when we think of an atheist, we think of somebody that does not believe in God. Okay, there's no God, as what the atheist today would say. But this is not what the Romans meant by that. See, in the Roman Empire, there were many gods. Okay, there were all sorts of gods. You could just kind of keep adding to the list. You may remember in the book of Acts, the Apostle Paul goes to the city of Athens, and he is grieved in his spirit because he looks around the city and there's just false god. There's these idols all over the place. See, the Romans were okay if a group of people had a different god, as long as that god was added to all the rest. But these Christians were strange in that they only worshiped one true and living God. And because they didn't worship many gods, just the one God, they were called atheists. It's kind of odd for us to hear that, but that's how they viewed them. But not only that, the early Christians were accused of incest. Now, you may wonder, how did that come about? Well, around here, we give lots of hugs, right? It's one of the things I've been accused of, is not giving enough hugs. But I want you to know I'm growing in this. You are winning. In fact, a couple weeks ago, I gave out so many hugs that 2 days later, I got sick. So you got to be patient with me. I got to build up my immunity. I'm hugging people now left and right. I can't stop it. It's my natural response. And so these early believers, they were hugging each other, but they went a few notches beyond what we do. When they would greet each other, they greeted each other with a holy kiss. Now, I have to say, I draw the line here, all right? I'm not kissing you. Please don't kiss me, all right? And so they're hugging each other. They're kissing each other. But they also refer to one another as brothers and sisters. So we do this, right? In the baptism, I'll say, I baptize you as my brother. I baptize you as my sister in the faith. And we do the baptism because in Christ, we are brothers and sisters. We are a spiritual family. And so these unbelievers, they're not followers of Jesus, they're seeing them hugging and kissing and calling each other brothers and sisters. They've heard of these love feasts, and they said, this is just, there's incest taking place all over. Now, there's one more accusation, and that's the early Christians were cannibals. And I think you can maybe get the reason for that. these early Christians would gather and they would share a meal. And the meal that they were sharing, they talked of eating the body and drinking the blood of this man, Jesus. Excuse me. Now, in our church, we don't believe that the actual bread and the cup is the actual body of Jesus. It's a representation. It's a very powerful symbol. Now, the reason that we believe that is because Jesus said other things such as, I am the vine, or I am the door. Now, is Jesus an actual vine or door? We would say, of course not. And so when Jesus takes the bread and he takes the cup and he says, this is my body, this is my blood, it's this very powerful symbol, this representation of what it means, that his body is broken for us, that his blood is shed for us. But you have to admit, if you're not familiar with that, speaking of eating a body and drinking blood, it is very strange. It can be strange for people now. It was very strange back then. And so they were accused of being cannibals. Now, you may be here today and you don't have these accusations or quite this misunderstanding. But when it comes to some of the things that we do as believers, you may be a little confused. And so a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about what does baptism mean? I mean, taking somebody and putting them in water and bringing them back up. I mean, that is a beautiful experience, but it is kind of strange if you're not familiar with what it means. And in the same way, as we eat the bread and drink the cup and speak of Jesus, his body and his death and his blood, it can be very, very odd. And so we're going to look at this passage where Jesus celebrates the Passover meal with his disciples and see how he changes the focus to himself. And we're going to understand the meaning of what is taking place and how it applies to us today. Now, a quick note, you may have here that I keep saying Lord's Supper. Now, growing up in Baptist circles and us being a Baptist church, that's typically how we refer to it. Doesn't mean it's the right way. It's just how we commonly call it. Others of you, given your background, you may call it communion. That word communion just means you are participating, you are communing with God and with each other. And so as we hold the elements, the bread and the cup, we're communing with God. It's a tangible way for us to participate with the Lord, but also to participate with each other. This is why we encourage you not to have the Lord's Supper just by yourself in isolation, but to gather as a body of believers and share it together. It's also called the Eucharist. Now, in our church, we often don't refer to it this way, but that word Eucharist, it does kind of have a lot of baggage and different things with it, but it simply means to give thanks. As we are reading through this passage, Jesus took the bread and then the cup, and he gave thanks before they took both of them, and this is where that word or that term Eucharist comes from. Now, in our passage that we just read, we kind of jumped right into the middle of this meal that Jesus is sharing with his disciples, but I want to take a bit of a step back and understand what's taking place here, the celebration, what these different elements and order of this meal, what it all means. So last week, we spoke a little bit about when Jesus comes into the city of Jerusalem, what's called the triumphal entry, also known as Palm Sunday. And so Jesus enters the city on Sunday. By Friday, the crowd really changes their view of Christ. And by Friday, he is crucified. But then a few days later, on that next Sunday, he rises from the dead. This Passover celebration is celebrated on Thursday. And this Passover celebration was a huge deal for the Jewish people. It was one of their most holy and religious celebrations. It had to be celebrated within the walls of Jerusalem. And so the city of Jerusalem, some estimates think that maybe around 40,000 people were there kind of on the normal time. But the time of the Passover, around 100,000 people would flood into the city. So just a massive amount of people. And this Passover meal, it really kicked off this seven-day celebration that is known as the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And so it kicked off that celebration. Now, this Passover meal, why was it celebrated? Well, it was an annual celebration remembering the Israelites' affliction, their oppression at the hands of the Egyptians. For 400 years, they had been oppressed by the Egyptian. They cry out to God, and God hears their cry, and he miraculously and very powerfully delivers them from the Egyptians. Now, this Passover meal, it was very symbolic. It was recounting the story of the Exodus and God's deliverance. And there were certain prayers that would be said, certain songs that would be sung. It was all very scripted in the order of what took place. And the bread and the lamb and all these different things had very symbolic meanings. And so I want to walk through some of these so we kind of understand better what is taking place. So during the meal, 4 cups of wine would be served. Now you may hear that and go, 4 cups? My gosh, how do they get through this meal? But a couple things to note. Some of the true Baptists out there, you kind of get nervous about that, right? Well, the meal took many hours. It would begin in the evening. By midnight, it was typically over, so many hours. Also, the 4 cups that were shared, it wasn't like everybody was downing their own cup. It was a shared cup and just taking a sip or so each time. And then the other is the wine was probably diluted. There's some disagreement there, but it may have been diluted more than wine today. Now, each of these 4 cups, they were highlighting a promise that God made, and we find these promises in Exodus chapter 6, verses 6 and 7. Now, I'm not going to read that entire passage, but I just want to explain a little bit of what each of these cups represent. And the first cup represented the promise that God would bring out his people. And all of these promises he fulfilled. He did bring out his people from Egypt. The second cup was where God said, I will deliver my people. And he does deliver them. The third cup was the promise that he would redeem his people. And then the fourth cup is that God would take them to the land of promise. And so as we discuss the cup, we now move to the bread. And the bread that was eaten was unleavened bread. Now, the reason for this is the very first Passover, the bread that God instructed Moses and all the Israelites to eat was to be unleavened because they were to leave Egypt quickly. They had their running shoes on, if you will, and so they were to eat it in a quick manner, in haste. And so yeast, you know, takes a few hours to rise, and God said, you don't have time for that. And so they celebrated this annual meal with this unleavened bread. And then there was the lamb. The lamb was the central piece of the meal. It was known as the Passover lamb. See, the Israelites had been instructed that judgment was going to fall. You remember all the different plagues. They were just focused on the Egyptians. But this 10th plague applied to everyone. The reason is because all of us deserve God's judgment for our sin. But God created or provided a way that his people, or really anybody, even the Egyptians, if they would take this lamb and sacrifice it and put some of the blood on their door frames of their house, that this angel of destruction, when it went out over the land, it would pass over that house. The judgment would not take place with that home. But not only did they take some of the blood and spread it on the doorpost, they were also to take this lamb, to roast it, and to eat all of it. And so that's what this food represents. This is the symbolism with this food as they walk through this meal, reminding them of all the ways the Lord has provided. Now, I want to move a little bit to the setting of this room. I think sometimes we think of this picture here, right, of Leonardo da Vinci, the beautiful painting, but it is nothing of what the meal would have been, you know, set up, the setup for the meal. So a little bit of the arrangement. There would have been about 3 couches, maybe you might even call them long pillows, and they form this kind of upside down U-shape. And Jesus would have been at the head of this. He would have been presiding over the meal. Now, you did not sit down. In many parts of the world, even today, you wouldn't sit for the meal. You would recline. And so you would recline on your left side and be propped up by your left elbow and use your right hand to reach into the middle. There would be a table very low and grab the food and eat it. And so this is the setting. It was a very intimate setting with this meal. But also there was a specific order that the presider, and the presider of this meal would most likely be the father or maybe the eldest male. They would preside and lead the family through the different parts of this Passover celebration, this Passover meal. And the presider would follow this order of service, and it began with the first cup of wine. Now, there's some nuances to this. I don't have time to get into all that. But the first cup would come out, and the presider would say a blessing, and then they would drink this first cup. And after they drank the first cup, the food would be set up. And then the kids that were at this meal, they would begin to ask the father questions. You know, what does this mean, or what does that mean? And the father would take those questions and begin to answer them and instruct the family, recounting this wonderful story of God's deliverance. And after that, they would get to the second cup of wine, and it would be drank, and then the meal would be eaten. After eating the meal, they would get to the third cup, and after enjoying that third cup, they would sing a song, or actually maybe a couple songs taken from the book of Psalms. And then after singing, they would drink the fourth cup, and the meal would be over, and this would take place, the meal being finished by about midnight. And so this is the order of this meal, and I would ask you to keep that in mind as we work through how Jesus changes the focus from this Passover celebration that's been going on for at least 1,000 years. Some maybe think 1,500 years, and how he puts the focus on himself. Because what we read in verse 26 is this, that while they were eating, so they've had the second cup, they're now about to have the third, but not quite yet, that they're eating this meal, the unleavened bread and the lamb and all the rest. And Jesus takes the bread and he gives thanks and he breaks it. Now, all this was what the disciples expected, but then he does something shocking. This bread was known as the bread of affliction. It was pointing back to the affliction the Israelites had endured under the Egyptians. And so Jesus is doing everything normal, but then he puts the focus on himself. He says, "This is my body." He's been telling the disciples over and over again, "I'm going to suffer, I'm going to die." And he's still trying to get them to understand. And he says, "This bread represents my body broken and beaten and torn for you." But they didn't understand. They then get to the third cup. And this third cup was known as the cup of redemption. And again, Jesus says something shocking. What he should have talked about is the redemption that took place in Egypt. But now he says, "This is my blood of the new covenant, which is poured out for many." That word redemption or redeem, that is an important word that you need to understand. That word redeem means to be bought at a price. The Israelites were bought at a price. They were redeemed from Egypt. And what was that price? It was the judgment that the Egyptians had to endure. God in his mercy through Moses had gone time and time again to the Egyptians saying, "Let my people go to worship me." But they refused. And they kept refusing. And finally God said enough, and judgment was sent on that people. And so Jesus, what they expected was him to talk about the slavery that his people were in. But what he is doing now, putting the focus on himself, as he is saying to his disciples, he is saying to us, there is a greater slavery that we are under. It is not a physical slavery. It is a spiritual slavery. And the slavery that we are in, what we are enslaved to is sin. But we are also enslaved to the fear of death. And our redemption price, the price to free us from that slavery, was God's Son. Jesus takes that cup. He puts the focus on himself, and he says, "My blood will be shed for you so that you can be redeemed." Again, he is putting the focus on himself. But there's another thing that Matthew is wanting us to see. He's putting a focus on something that is missing. So in this meal, there was the bread, there was the cup, there was the lamb. But in Matthew's gospel account, and in Mark and in Luke, they never mention the lamb. Now, was there a lamb at this celebration? Maybe, but we're actually not told. And regardless if there was an actual lamb or not, what Matthew is wanting us to see is that it is missing, because he wants our focus to be on Christ. See, the disciples did not understand it at the time, but as they reflected back, they began to realize that Jesus' body broken for us, his blood shed for us, but here is the Passover lamb before us. That Passover lamb that was sacrificed so the Israelites could go free. And Jesus is the ultimate. He is the true. He is the great Passover lamb that we need. Amen. So that our sin, our fear of death, we no longer have to worry about that. Jesus took that for us. Now it is passed over. God's judgment is passed over us. And you may be asking, what's with all this talk of blood and death? I mean, it just seems so just ancient. I mean, is our sin really that bad? And I think what Jesus is doing here by speaking of those things of death and blood is he's saying, yes, your sin, my sin is that bad. It is that serious. He is saying our sin, our rejection of God is so serious that Christ had to come and die as a substitute in our place. In the book of Romans, we read that the wages of our sin is death. In Ephesians, it speaks of our spiritual condition, that we are spiritually dead. But that then leads to our physical death. This is the reality that we live in. Death is not natural. And so we are spiritually dead, but also one day we will physically die. And Christ is saying there is a way to escape that. And your sin is that bad. It is that serious. But also look at the amazing love that I have for you. This morning, are you doubting God's love for you? Do you question God's love for you? If that is you, you need to go to the cross. You need to remind yourself of the great love that Christ has for you. That he willingly endured the beating and the mocking, and he laid down his life for you. What greater love is there than someone to lay down his life? And this is what Christ does for us. So we see how serious our sin is, but how amazing Christ's love for us is. And so as we prepare to take the Lord's Supper, I want to highlight three ways as we have just a time of reflection, as we pass out the elements. It's going to be very, very silent, other than, you know, just Bryce playing some music, not much talking. I want to highlight three ways that as we prepare to take the Lord's Supper that you can reflect and pray on. First, let us remember the great sacrifice of Jesus. See, this Passover celebration was celebrated year after year after year. It was causing the people to look back at God's love and deliverance for them. And with the Lord's Supper, when we celebrate it, it causes us to look back and remember Christ's love for us. Secondly, as we take the Lord's Supper, we do so in a spirit of anticipation, that there will be a greater feast that we will one day enjoy with Jesus in the new heaven and the new earth. See, in the Passover meal that Jesus has with his disciples, they take the third cup, they sing, and then they leave. Christ actually says, I won't drink anymore from the fruit of the vine. This last cup, this fourth cup was reminding the people that God takes them to the land of promise. Amen. We read this in Exodus chapter 6, verses 7 and 8, this promise that they were celebrating. I will take you as my own people. I will be your God. I will bring you to the land I swore with uplifted hand to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And I will give it to you as a possession. But Jesus never gets to the fourth cup. He's saying, I'm not going to enjoy this cup until I return and I set up the new heaven and the new earth where you are with me in my Father's kingdom. See, Christ is taking us to that greater land of promise. And at this banquet that he will provide for us, we will see our Savior face to face. We will enjoy the food and the wine with him. And so today, if you are struggling, if you are lacking hope, the point of holding the bread and the cup is to do so in a spirit of anticipation. that as we take it, we remember, but also we have hope that one day Christ will return. He is victorious. But then thirdly and lastly, we take the Lord's Supper to renew our relationship with Jesus. After Jesus and the disciples, they share this meal, he tells them something horrible. He says, you're all going to fall away. Here just in a few hours, you're all going to desert me. You're going to be unfaithful. But Jesus gives them this promise that after I die and rise, I will meet you again in Galilee. He's going to restore and renew their relationship. And so as we take the Lord's Supper, what I've experienced in my life over the years is a wonderful time to renew our relationship with Jesus. That we drift, that there's sin in our life. But yet when we hold those elements in that tangible way, it causes us to renew, to confess our sin, to get right with Jesus.